Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack. I'm Chris. I'm Michael Prinz. Today, I'll be reading from Kiplinger Personal Finance. The first article is written by Kim Clark, titled, Get Your Cash Off the Sidelines. With interest rates set to drop, it's time to put your money to work in other investments. This is on page 26. Those nice, safe returns on cash sure have been sweet, but don't count on them lasting. After years of near zero yields, interest rates began a rewarding upward climb in 2022. In early 2024, prime money market funds yielded an average of 5.1%. You could find one-year certificates of deposit at 5.5% and high-yield savings account cresting at 5%. Those yields handily beat inflation, which rose 3.4% overall in 2023. Little wonder that investors have added more than half a trillion dollars to money market funds in the past 12 months. But the Federal Reserve's expected interest rate cuts in 2024 will sap yields on all kinds of savings accounts and safe short-term investments. Investors are betting that the Fed will cut interest rates faster and deeper than it has publicly telegraphed, perhaps pushing money fund yields below 4% later this year. Most economists expect inflation will fall also, potentially keeping inflation-adjusted returns on cash in the black. Still, the prospect of more anemic interest rates is sparking many investment professionals to suggest that investors rethink their plump cash positions. It was definitely the right move to go to cash in 2022, after the Fed started raising interest rates, says Benoit Ann, a managing director at MFS Investment Management. But everything comes to an end, he says. You are going to leave a lot of chips on the table if you stick with a high cash allocation in 2024. Investors seeking safety by loading up on cash may neglect to protect their portfolios from three other important risks. Inflation that reduces their purchasing power, the risk of having to lock in lower rates when it comes time to reinvest, and opportunity cost, or the risk of self-destructive regret if you miss out on a bull market in some other asset class. It's understandable that many investors are reluctant to leave the nice warm bed of high money market rates, says Lauren Zangardi-Hines, a certified financial planner based in Richmond, Virginia. But she's urging her clients to adjust their portfolios for lower interest rates. That doesn't mean taking the financial equivalent of a polar bear plunge into stocks and bonds, she says, you don't have to go all in all at once. But put your toes in. Put a little bit of money in every month and stick to that plan, she advises. Consider some options below. Find your way into fixed income. Though the highs might already be behind us, it still pays to lock in some of today's still enticing yields. Rob Williams, Managing Director at Financial Planning at Charles Schwab, suggests building a ladder of CDs or Treasury securities by spreading out the money among investments that come due in 2, 3, 4, and 5 years. At the end of January, a 5-year Treasury note yielded 3.9%. An easy way to wade into the broader fixed income market is with a diversified core bond fund. Fidelity Total Bond, symbol FBND, $46, a member of the Kiplinger ETF 20, the list of our favorite exchange-traded funds, has a duration of just over 6 years, meaning the value of the fund will rise roughly 6% if rates fall 1 percentage point. Prices and interest rates move in opposite directions, of course. The actively managed fund, yielding 5.1%, divides its portfolio roughly into thirds among government IOUs, corporate bonds, and mortgages. Its expense ratio is 0.36%. You can also trust the superb bond-picking skills of the managers of Baird Aggregate Bond, symbol BAGSX, another intermediate-term core fund and a member of the Kiplinger 25, the list of our favorite actively managed funds. It charges 0.55% in expenses and yields 4%. Once you get your feet wet, explore the bargains on offer in the bond market now. Suggest Pramod Atluri, a fixed income portfolio manager for the Capital Group, home of the American funds. But be choosy. You should only take risks when you're getting paid to take risks, he says. Atluri sees promise now in government and agency-backed mortgage bonds. Mortgage funds generally languished in 2023 as rates rose and investors focused on other types of bonds. But as rates reverse course, there's plenty of room for price gains on top of a healthy yield, Atluri says. And risks are low, even if homeowners default, because of guarantees from Uncle Sam or government-sponsored enterprises. American Funds Mortgage Fund, MFAEX, available without a sales charge on fund platforms including Fidelity and Schwab, charges 0.63% in expenses and recently yielded 4.2%. Or consider Vanguard GNMA, symbol VFIIX. They invest in bonds backed by the Government National Mortgage Association, and it has a solid record, charges an expense ratio of 0.2%, and yields 3.2%. Step carefully into stocks. In early 2024, many investors may be leery of a stock market trading at record highs and dominated by a handful of enormous technology stocks with sky-high valuations. Stocks in the S&P 500 index recently traded at a price-earnings ratio of 20, compared with a 10-year average P/E of 17.6, according to FactSet Research. Savita Subramanian, head of U.S. equity strategy at Bank of America Global Research, suggests investors opt for stocks trading at more reasonable price-earnings levels, so-called cyclical stocks. Or those most sensitive to economic swings, are neglected and inexpensive, Subramanian says, and she counts banks and financials among the sectors positioned to do well. Subramanian is especially bullish on dividend-paying stocks. While the Magnificent Seven have soared, everything else has flatlined, she says. Dividend stocks are trading at 30% discount to the rest of the market, the biggest discount since 2000. One option among the KIPP 25 funds is Vanguard Equity Income Fund, symbol VEIPX, which has a portfolio of nearly 200 companies with P&Es averaging about 13 and an average dividend yield of 3.4%. Zach Johnson, Chief Investment Officer of Stack Financial Management, suggests investors also focus on companies in sectors that have missed out on much of the recent bull market run-up. Healthcare and consumer staples companies have comparatively low average P&Es, he says. Consider investing a small amount in those sectors with ETFs such as Healthcare Select Sector SPDR, symbol XLV, $140, and Consumer Staples Select Sector SPDR, symbol XLP, $73. Because he expects economic trouble and market volatility in 2024, Johnson is keeping about half of Stack's portfolio in cash or short-term bonds. But he's bullish on Cigna Group, symbol CI, $301, a health insurer trading at 11 times expected earnings for the year ahead. Cigna's 2024 revenues are on pace to rise nearly 19%, compared with expected 2023 levels. This according to analyst estimates compiled by S&P Global Market Intelligence, and earnings per share should be up 14%. Analysts see the shares reaching $354 over the next 12 to 18 months. Johnson also sees value in some industrials, including Genuine Parts, symbol GPC, $140. Its auto parts business is recession-resistant. People who can't afford a new car are going to fix the old one. And it's benefiting from industrial automation, the wave of the future, Johnson says. The company has also increased its annual dividend for 67 straight years. Morningstar analyst David Schwartz says the stock would be fairly priced at $161 per share. Now, if you want some principal protection, but you also have a fear of missing out on potential bull market gains, consider one of the many new defined outcome ETFs. These funds, offered by First Trust, Innovator Capital Management, and a handful of other issuers, use options to create a buffer against stock market losses, to varying degrees over certain periods. The catch here is that the strategy caps potential gains. They are not a magic bullet, cautions Schwab's Williams, and they come with a lot of fine print. Fighting FOMO. Pay attention to how you put your cash to work as well as what you buy. David Blanchett, head of retirement research for PGIM, which is the investment management division of Prudential Financial, suggests parceling out any shifts in your cash allocation over time. Dollar cost averaging, or investing a set amount at regular intervals, can take the emotion out of investing. It will also result in paying a lower average price per share in volatile markets, because you'll buy fewer shares when the prices are high and more when they are low. Lastly, as you contemplate deflating your cash cushion a bit, think about the reason you're holding cash in the first place. If it's to be able to sleep at night, consider that it is almost impossible to time the market perfectly, says Blanchett. Regrets about missing out on an unexpected bull market can also keep you awake. Next, on page 30, we have Meet the Guru of Market Stats. Whatever you want to know about an S&P or Dow Jones index, he can tell you. This is an insider interview by Ann Kate Smith, interviewing Howard Silverblatt. Howard is a senior index analyst at S&P Dow Jones Indices. He has worked at S&P since May 1977, and over that time, stocks, as measured by the S&P 500, have returned 11.8% annualized, including dividends. Kiplinger. What keeps you interested in the stock market? Silverblatt. It's constantly changing. You're not sure what's going to happen. The market just made new highs, the first since January 2022. Money is being put down not just by professionals, but by individual investors. There are so many interactions with other people. Then there's the actual economics of it and the deal-making. It keeps me on my toes. Things change, and you have to change with them. But even though there are different scenarios every day, human nature takes over, and there are similarities. You can learn from what happened 20 or 30 years ago. What has changed the most? Communication, definitely. The ability to get information. It used to take me a week to get data for a spreadsheet, and it'd be on a hard copy. Now, you can research companies or industries around the world. I can go on my cell phone and see something happening half a world away. Before, I'd be waiting for it to come over the ticker tape. Communication is positive and negative. You see what's happening instantaneously, but you can also get misinformation immediately. What's also changed is the ability to trade. It took me over a week to open my first brokerage account, and now I can open one instantly on my phone. People think of the S&P 500 as the market. Is that a fair equivalency? Yes, as long as they're talking about the U.S. large-cap stocks. The 500 is a broad indicator. The purpose of the index is to emulate the U.S. common stock market, right down to the sub-industry. But lately, a small group of stocks, namely the Magnificent Seven, have dominated the index. That's definitely unusual, but not unheard of. This is one of the strongest cases of dominance we've seen since the early 80s. These seven companies have grown to 27%, 28% of the market. That's unusually high. Historically, the top 10 stocks in the S&P 500 are about 22% of the index. Last year, the Magnificent Seven accounted for 62% of the S&P 500's total return. If you were not invested in them, you did not participate in the market as well. But the S&P did not create the Magnificent Seven. The market itself pushed up the price of these stocks. The Dow Jones Industrial Average often leads the news, not the S&P 500. Why? The Dow Jones Industrial Average goes back to 1896. It's easy to understand. People on the street, and not just Wall Street, can probably name a couple of companies in the Dow. Over the long term, the Dow and S&P correlate pretty well, but short term, not at all. In 2023, the S&P 500 returned 26%, with dividends, and the Dow only 16%. In 2022, the S&P lost 18%, the Dow 6.9%. The Dow is richer in dividends. It's recognized, but money managers don't use it much. They use the S&P as a benchmark. Among the many indexes, which should investors prioritize? For investors in the U.S., first, my bias aside, the S&P 500. It tells me how the majority of money is doing in the U.S. After that, look at mid and small cap indexes to see if there's a big difference in returns between large and small caps, and then look at specialty indexes and sector indexes. Small caps have had trouble sustaining a rally lately. How come? If you go back 25 years, you get better numbers with small cap stocks. They run in cycles. Liquidity issues, or how easy it is for stocks to trade, have a much bigger impact on small caps, and you also have to worry about cash flow. Small caps are more known for expected growth prospects going forward. Is index investing best for individual investors? It's not for everyone, but indexes are a very efficient way to buy something, whether it's U.S. large cap stocks or something else. Someone has gone through those companies. They're viable companies and trade enough that you don't have to worry about liquidity. They're investable, and someone is managing that for you for a low fee. And there are so many indexes today. If I want only tech stocks, I can go to a tech sector index, or healthcare, or dividend stocks. All these portfolios and indexes are very good and efficient ways to buy. The negative is that an index combines different companies, winners, and losers. Beating the index is hard. 60% of money managers underperformed their benchmark in the first half of 2023, and that was a big improvement. But if you know the right stock to buy, you only need one. How do you invest? Because of my position, I'm limited as to what I can buy. I've stayed with funds for my own investments. I do not own any actively managed funds now. There's a lot I can do. I can double down on tech if I want, or even go into Bitcoin. But I turned 70 in February. I'm looking for more stability, less risk, and more income. You're the keeper of a gazillion stats. Which are the most important for investors to track? It depends on the investor, but I'd say the most important are company earnings and cash flow. Earnings don't tell the whole story, but the combination of earnings and cash flow gives me the best idea of what a company has to offer. Then, the dividend and the stock price. Although, if you're focused on growth, the dividend isn't as important. Is a 2% dividend enough when I can get 5% from a treasury note? Am I paying too much in terms of price relative to earnings or cash flow? Then you have to be comfortable with the business model and the management. People need to be mindful of what they're investing in. It's not a game. It's real money. You need to know the risks and rewards. We all have a high tolerance for gains, but if you lose 10% of your money, what does that mean to you? If I can't afford to lose it, I can't afford to put it on the table. Next, on page 32, we have James K. Glassman telling us the beauty of boring stocks. With wars raging in Ukraine and the Middle East, a former president on trial, federal deficits running into the trillions, and just general tumult all around, Wouldn't it be nice to be bored once in a while? Stocks can provide the respite you need. Well, certain kinds of stocks. Not Tesla, certainly, or AMC, the movie chain that has gone from over 500 a share to under 5 in less than 3 years. Oof. No, I am talking about shares of companies and boring businesses that just keep making money doing quotidian things. Consider Littelfuse, a 97-year-old manufacturer based in Des Plaines, Illinois. As you might have guessed, Littelfuse makes little fuses, or more elegantly, circuit protection devices used in cars, trucks, and industrial products. When I wrote about Littelfuse in May 2004, it was trading at $41 a share. It's now $242. Littelfuse was a selection of Elliot Schlang, an analyst in Cleveland, whose specialty is finding numbingly mundane companies in the Midwest. Kevin Hassett and I highlighted Schlang in our 1999 book, Dow 36,000, and he didn't disappoint. One of his favorites, Cintas, is a provider of work uniforms. It has risen from $45 a share to $605 over the past 20 years. And then there's Aptar Group, a Crystal Lake, Illinois maker of pumps, closures, and aerosol valves. Boring enough. It's gone from $20 to $130 over the same period. I'm using 20-year figures because if you want to own boring stocks, you need to have a long-time horizon, 10 years or more. It can take a decade or two for investors to wake up to the value of these companies. Now, my favorite boring stock of all time is RPM International, which makes coatings for waterproofing and rustproofing. Based in Medina, Ohio, RPM has risen from $17 to $107 in the past 20 years. Its dividend payout has increased every year for the past half century. The current yield is small today, 1.7%, but if you had bought shares in 2004, RPM would be paying you more than 10% annually on your original investment. A consistently rising dividend is a sign that a boring stock has a true moat, or protection against competitors. Companies with a strong niche, through patents or brand or just reputation with customers, can increase their profits and dividends regularly, even in tough times. Schlang told me 20 years ago that you don't have to be a genius to find firms with moats. Just look for the evidence, those rising earnings and payouts. Cintas has raised its dividend for 41 years straight. Aptar, for 30. From Schling's imparted wisdom and my own experience, I have gleaned other advice about finding the best mundane stocks. They are largely self-funding. In other words, firms that tend to make capital investments out of their own profits rather than through outside borrowing. You won't find many businesses that have no debt, but you should favor companies that have very little. RPM, with a market capitalization of $13.7 billion, has about $3 billion in debt, about the same as 3 years ago. Its interest expense last year was just $126 million. Next, few analysts follow them. When a company's shares are covered by lots of financial experts, the company is unlikely to be a hidden gem, in Schlang's words. It has been priced by an efficient market. But some stocks are so boring that their prices may be inefficient, that is, lower, or in some cases higher, than they ought to be. Apple is covered by 37 analysts. Lazy Boy, a stock whose name practically puts you to sleep, is covered by 3. And Tootsie Roll, a Schlang obsession for decades, is covered by none at all. Insiders are on board. You want founders, directors, and managers with skin in the game and interests that align with those of their investors. Insiders own 15% of Cintas, with a market cap of $61 billion. They mostly stick to the U.S. One way to keep things simple is by owning firms that do most of their business in the U.S. Then you don't have to worry so much about the currency fluctuations or about geopolitical threats. A good example of a boring domestic sector is home building. It's why I like NVR, which has soared in 20 years from $460 to $7,075. And yes, that's not a misprint. I have long been a fan of Pool, a Louisiana-based distributor of pool supplies. The stock soared from $21 in 2004 to a high of $565 in 2021, getting a big boost from the stay-at-home trend during the COVID pandemic. Shares have now settled to $371, which is still an attractive price. Stock valuations are reasonable. Cheap is just a bonus. Zhilang once told me that preference is given to a great company over a great stock. Yes, but always look for a bargain. One is Gentex, maker of rearview mirrors. In 2023, revenues rose 20% compared with the previous year, and profits were up 34%. But the stock trades at just 16 times earnings, based on the 2024 consensus projection of analysts. Just 9 of them. Integrity counts. Companies are the sum total of the human beings that manage them, Schlang once wrote. It's hard to gauge the integrity of most CEOs, but when you find one who acts erratically or has evidenced little regard for the humanity of their employees, shareholders, or customers, then sell the stock. The Dow Jones Industrial Average in the past was dominated by firms in mundane businesses. Now it includes a few sexy stocks, such as Salesforce and Nike. But the components remain largely boring. Walmart, McDonald's, Verizon, and the like. The best way to buy the Dow is through SPDR, Dow Jones Industrial Average, an exchange-traded fund also known as Diamonds. One mutual fund family that's proud of investing in boring companies is Parnassus. In a message to shareholders last year, its management wrote, "We often find that what may strike some as boring companies are in fact durable businesses with interesting drivers that can compound quality over the long term. In our research, we find some common threads running through these companies. They are defensive in tough times. They have a strong economic moat, and they are often quietly innovative in ways that add value." The portfolio of Parnassus Core Equity, symbol PRBLX, includes such boring wonders as Ball, which was founded in 1880 as a glass jar maker, and now focuses on aluminum packaging. Another of the fund's holdings is Sherwin-Williams, the Cleveland-based print company whose shares have gone from $12 to $304 in the past 20 years. Yes, good investing is just like watching paint dry. And with that, that's going to be it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the April edition of Kiplinger Personal Finance. I'm Michael Prinz. So long, until next time.